For the love of goats, we are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. This is a really special episode for me because I am getting the opportunity to reconnect with a couple people that I met like 17 or 18 years ago, very early in our homesteading and our goat journey. And that is Margaret Hathaway and Carl Schatz. Margaret is the author of the book, Year of the Goat. And the photos in there are done by her husband, Carl. Welcome to the show today.
Oh, thanks for having us. It's so great to see you.
It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you guys back and to talk to you again. We talked to Margaret last year about the agritourism that you guys do on Ten Apple Farm. And I was so excited when she said that her your first book, Year of the Goat, was going to be reprinted, because that's how we met.
Yeah.
And we're actually in the book. I felt so famous. I saw the first book because we were like just your average little goat farm back then. I mean, you know, honestly, at this point, most people who had goats back then are probably gone. Like they left the farm and the goats and everything, but we totally fell in love with them. And it's, you know, just gotten deeper and deeper into goats over the years.
I'm trying to remember how we even found you.
Like, yeah, I'm not sure how we got connected with you. Someone must have made the introduction, because that's, I mean, it was really internet research.
Yeah, we were Googling and looking for things, but it wasn't the way it is now, where it's like, you know, everything comes up. So,
but it's funny because you talk about yourself being like new to it then, but you seemed so seasoned and like your family was, I mean, we still
talk
about,
everyone was really involved.
Yeah. We still talk about what an inspiration, like your family, your three kids, like we really very consciously modeled a lot of what we do on your farm.
Yeah.
So it's funny to think that you were still at the early stage then, because, you know, you were like mentors to us.
Yeah, it was so funny because I had the Antiquity Oaks blog back then, which was just an online diary. I mean, that's what blogs were back then, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was just writing, you know, daily entries about like, oh, this is what happened on the farm today. And somebody commented, hey, I'm following this other blog called Year of the Goat. And you should check them out. And so when I did, I was like, oh my gosh, I should contact you guys.
Well, maybe that's how it happened.
Yeah.
You contacted us and we were like, all right, we're going to be driving through. Let's go visit.
Because
we were absolutely, you know, if anyone reached out to us, we were like, all right, we're going there.
Yeah. So turn the car.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so amazing what you were doing then. And I mean, we follow your career now. So amazing what you're doing now.
So funny. Cause like, that was the year that like we had our first challenges with kids. And I know Carmen played a pretty prominent role in your blog post that you wrote about your visit. And there's also a picture of her in the book, because she was like the first kid we almost lost. You know, we were new. It's like, we'd only been at it for 3 years. I thought her mother had been in labor for like 2 or 3 days. Like we would not leave her. Like she was in the barn. You know, somebody was with her all the time. And finally, I was just like, we have no idea what we're doing. She's clearly not in labor. Like, we have to go to the grocery store. I'd been putting off grocery shopping for days. And so, like, everybody, I'm like, let's just get dressed and go. And everybody did it. And then, like, just, okay, Jonathan, one last time, just run to the barn, make sure Dancy's okay. He comes running back and goes, there's three kids and one of them might be dead. And I was like, oh my gosh. I went running to the barn, and there are these two big bucklings that are walking around nursing and stuff. And there's this tiny little doe like laying in the straw. And I was like, oh my gosh, is she alive? And I picked her up and I called my goat mentor, and you know, she told me everything. I was like, okay, she's got hypothermia. This is how you warm her up and everything. And then I wound up tube feeding her. And it was just like, I was so scared it was going to kill her. And, you know, we wound up bottle feeding her, and I took a picture of her. I don't know if you guys have more pictures. I would love.
I have a ton of pictures of her. Yeah. I just remember how small she was. Like, yes. I couldn't believe how small. Like, I was like, I didn't know goats were could be made that small. She was so tiny.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was so soft. I think that was like our first experience with like new baby goat, how soft they are.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. We're just gonna reminisce about this one particular sweet little Carmen.
I know. And Carmen, she was like our first homegrown champion. I did a podcast episode on how much should you help with goat birthing, and I talked about Carmen and how, you know, because some people would have said, well, shouldn't you have just let her die, like, you know, survival of the fittest. And it's like, no, actually she turned out to be like the matriarch of my most parasite resistant line. You know, like most of her progeny have never had a dewormer in their lives. Like, wow. They're incredibly hardy. She just got unlucky, you know.
Yeah.
Her placental attachment wasn't as good as her brother's. And, you know, we gave her that little help she needed at birth. And then she grew up to be an incredibly healthy, productive goat. She was our first homegrown champion. So, I mean, she was awesome in so many ways. The first goat to get a milk star.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that that's her, like how she grew up.
Yeah. And I've got multiple lines of doe lines coming down from her. So they're fabulous. So tell everybody, we want to talk about your book. What was the original idea behind The Year of the Goat?
I think the original idea was we were living in New York City, although neither of us are really city people per se. I grew up in Maine and Margaret grew up in Kansas. So certainly not the big city. And we were just having fantasies of not being in the city anymore. And what would we do? And somehow hit on the idea of goats and making goat cheese. But we really didn't know anything about goats or cheese making for that matter. And so decided to use the skills we did have, which was writing and photography. So Margaret, you know, was a writer and had worked in book publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a photographer and photo editor at the time. And so we put those skills to use and envisioned, you know, doing this sort of travel research, you know, project that we called The Year of the Goat.
And it was the Zodiac, The Year of the Goat. So that was,
I think, one of the signs
we, you know, we're looking to the stars for, like, should we abandon our lives and actually go on this madcap adventure. And the fact that it was the Year of the Goat seemed like a nudge in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. We quit our jobs, put everything in storage and started driving all over.
Borrowed your parents' car.
Yeah, borrowed a car.
For a year.
And just started. The first thing we, you know, started by looking up kind of like larger events. Like, well, you know, we went to an ADGA convention and we went to the Millington, Tennessee, Goat Days Family Festival. So like things that were kind of more publicly
like festivals,
conferences and conventions. And so we started going to those and meeting people there. And then those people would say, oh, you should really go visit, you know, so-and-so. And we ended up at places like Split Creek Farm in South Carolina and meeting Evan Evans.
Who's since passed.
Yeah.
And just forming sort of a network. And, you know, our original idea was that we wanted to be cheesemakers, to have a licensed dairy and to sort of get into that world. And then the more people we met, the more examples we had of different ways of raising goats, the more we ended up ultimately on a diversified homestead where we're really, you know, trying to close the circle between production and consumption. And we have an agritourism business now.
During the year, we weren't just looking at like dairy goats, anything that had anything to do with goats. So like we went to the circus in Florida where they're training goats for the circus. And we went to the mohair warehouse in
somewhere in Texas.
San Angelo was the mohair in
San Angelo was the
or
livestock.
Sonora. Yeah. Sonora, Texas, where there's like, you know, it's like the mohair capital of the world went to an Angora goat shearing and we went goat packing
in Wyoming.
And, you know, basically anything that had anything to do with goats, whether it was dairy or fiber or meat or entertainment, we would drive. And I think by the end of the year, we'd put over 40,000 miles on the car and visited 43 of the sort of 48 contiguous states. We never made it to Alaska or Hawaii. One of these days, maybe we will.
Maybe.
And
if we can get a goat sitter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, and that was the year. And then we came back at the end of the year.
And we had a blog, like as you said, it was early in blogging, early but we had a blog that we were posting to sort of once a week about our exploits. Yeah,
which is still up. You can still go read some of our early entries.
So maybe you shouldn't. Kind of wordy. Though the photos are great.
Yeah. Go look at the photos.
Yeah, look at the photos, get the wordy.
Oh, I thought that the blog was great. I love following you guys on the blog after I met you and, you know, learned about you and stuff. Because it was, I still had a very narrow view of what goats were like back then, you know, because I mean, I knew nothing when I started in 2002. So by the time you guys came by, I knew a little about Nigerian dwarf goats, you know, but I don't think I really even knew hardly anybody at that point that had goats other than the person that I had bought goats from. Maybe the few people I had bought goats from and a few people on Yahoo groups.
Yeah. You know, I think our travels really like opened our mind to how we could raise goats. You know, I think that was one of the good things about our visits for us.
One of the big takeaways was how many, I mean, there's certainly wrong things you can do. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely
lots of right, but there's also a lot of wrong,
but also a lot of right ways. Like there's no like one right way to do things. Like there's lots of different ways and it's really about finding something that works for you and for your animals. And, you know, of course every piece of property is different. So that's going to dictate infrastructure and pasture and, you know, and access to browse and stuff like that. And that's all going to influence what, you know, the size of your herd or the kind of goats you might have or
what predators you have to worry about
You know, whether you're going to do dairy or other things. So obviously, you know, there are a lot of variables that can play into it, but seeing lots of different ways of doing it was, I think, very encouraging for us.
Yeah.
Because at the same time we were essentially at that point homeless. Not homeless, but we didn't have, I mean, we were on the road.
Yeah.
So we were also looking for a place to live. I mean, we were sort of planning, we would do that for a year and then we were going to start looking for a place. And I was kind of putting feelers out for jobs and we could have ended up really just about anywhere. And I think it was encouraging seeing that there were people doing different things with goats in every corner of the country. And, you know, even in some more, maybe not urban, but suburban settings. And I think it was encouraging to know that no matter where we ended up at the end of that year, you know, there was a pretty good possibility that we'd be able to sort of continue with the dream of raising goats.
Well, and now it's been 17 years on our farm in Maine. But it is funny to think back that we could have ended up,
in Syracuse
or in Southern California. Like there were
Kentucky.
There were a few places where Carl was looking at jobs, and our life could be so different.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the good things about the book is that if somebody is thinking of getting goats, it's always been one of the books that I've recommended to people. Like if you're thinking of getting goats and you're not quite sure what you want to do, it's a really good overview of all the different things. Like I can't think of anything you guys missed. You know, you saw lots of dairy goats and meat goats and angoras and, you know, the goats in the circus. And I mean, just you covered the gamut, I think. And so it really gives a great overview of the diversity of goats.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And thanks for recommending to the people.
And goats being, you know, used for weed eating, which is of course now like goat scaping it's like a big business now. There are people, I think, in a lot of states that are not just doing it kind of on the side, but like have developed like little businesses around goat scaping. And that was one of the things that we also looked at on a huge scale.
Yeah.
We visited Lonnie Malmberg.
Yeah, but it's interesting. In the Year of the Goat, she gets like maybe a couple sentences. This woman, Lonnie Malmberg, who has this wonderful, incredible operation with renting out goats for weed eating. But just maybe 2 years ago, she was profiled in the New York Times. And it was so great to see that she is still active and still mentoring people and teaching people. And it's like connecting with you. It's wonderful to see people who had such a formative influence on us are continuing to be active in the goat world. Yeah. It's exciting. I know there are some people that we really connected with who have passed over the years, which is also kind of strange. before the book was reissued, we revisited everything, we reread it, and it was kind of stunning how many people were older when we visited them, you know, and are no longer with us.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's kind of a downer, but.
But I think it just the longevity of, you know, when people, we left New York and said that, you know, we're going to do this and we want to get goats. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, it's like a phase, you know,
I remember there was someone who came to a reading that I gave who I met in other circumstances, like 5 years later. And he was like, oh yeah, I never thought you guys would actually like stick with that. Like, no way. He was so shocked that we still had goats.
Yeah.
So
I've heard that a lot too from people that we knew in the suburbs, you know, they're like, I can't believe you stuck it out. Like, yeah, yeah, for sure. You were going to be headed back to the suburbs in no time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's not just the goats. I mean, I think just the lifestyle of being here, having a relationship with the land and animals and, you know, being responsible for so much of the food that we eat. And it just feeds your soul in a way that I just can't imagine giving that up. You know, maybe not as many animals, or maybe, you know, there's definitely a few animals I think it wouldn't be so bad if they weren't around.
I think it's like the last 3 years we've been like, oh, maybe we'll keep like two kids. And then we end up, you know, because they look so pretty or their temperament is so sweet.
Yeah. Or so, they came from that line.
That line that never has girls. Yeah. And yeah, every goat owner knows that conversation.
But I think that there is something that it's definitely hard to imagine doing anything else now.
Yeah,
I definitely understand that. You get used to like having so much space and quiet, and you know, especially during the pandemic, I felt so incredibly blessed. You know, when you heard about people being stuck in like little, you know, tiny apartments and stuff, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can walk outside and go for a walk and not see anyone for, you know, miles, really.
Well, and we have three daughters now and they're all still at home. Our oldest will be 16 next week. And then we have a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old. And during the pandemic, what surprised me the most, I guess I hadn't thought about how self-sufficient we are. And then our life really didn't change that much. You know, I mean, we
were already working at home.
We had plenty of milk and eggs. you know, our kids were already used to, you know, having responsibilities around the house and in the barn. And we worked, you know, sort of as a team, as a family. But talking to friends who really didn't have that, I think the contrast in our lifestyles kind of was in sharp relief.
So what is one of the stories from the book that still just jumps out at you for whatever reason, you know, that as being kind of extraordinary?
Wow.
Well, I mean, in some ways the whole trip was, you know, everything we did felt extraordinary because it was all so new to us. I mean, we just hadn't really, we just didn't know that much about goats. It was really sort of a whim in a lot of ways, or it was a whim, but then this was how we were educating ourselves. So it felt like every place we visited felt extraordinary.
Well, and I think, I mean,
in some way.
And in an overarching way, like people's generosity to us with their time and their knowledge and their animals and sometimes with their guest rooms. I think we stayed with you. I think you are one of the guest rooms.
Yeah, one of the guest rooms we stayed in. Yeah. Right.
That throughout the whole year, we were overwhelmed by that. Just the way people helped us figure out who we wanted to be in the world was just incredible to us. And if there's anything extraordinary, I think it's that, just like how kind and generous people are and people everywhere, you know, any prejudice I might have harbored about parts of the country or just people that when I initially met them, just totally subverted. Like everyone was kind to us. And that was stunning. I mean, I think every chapter too, there's like something interesting, like Carmen, spending time with you and Carmen, the goat kid, that we had never known people who had goats in their house. now it's an every spring for us, yeah, you know, we're used to it.
The goats always come in.
But there are like little moments like that, or at Quillisasket Farm in Rice, Washington, just seeing the abundance that they were able to produce and harvest and forage from, to me, what looked like sort of the wilderness. They were able to bring back a basket of incredible food. Like little moments like that stick with me.
And then there were, of course, like the sort of like madcap, like adventure sort of things that were really unexpected, like, you know, goat chariot races in Millington and like things that you're like, you know, this is just kind of crazy. And going goat packing, which was like a totally unexpected thing. And I don't think when we left on the trip, it wasn't something that was on our radar that we knew about. And at some point over the course of the year, someone said, oh, you should really look at, you know, goat packing. And of course, as soon as we did, we're like, wait, what? Camping with goats? And and they carry all your camping equipment and you just go out in the woods? And we're like, yeah, we want to do that. And so we did. And it was amazing.
Well, and that's shaped business that we've ended growing.
Yeah. So now like really the main attraction of our agritourism business is goat hiking that we do with
without packs. It's not quite
it's a smaller scale, but it is the same sort of feeling of just getting out into the wilderness with some animals, having that sort of experience in the outdoors and reconnecting with the heritage that humans evolved alongside goats with, you know, sort of the herding, you know, lifestyle of, you know, many places in the world today. Walking with goats is just a normal activity. It's like you get up in the morning, you take your herd of goats and sheep somewhere, they graze, you walk them back at the end of the day, and that's just daily life. And here in the United States, we've become so disconnected from that and from those roots that it's nice to be able to provide people with the ability to make that connection, even if it's for just a couple of hours in an afternoon.
Yeah. Well said.
Thanks.
What else do you think that people should know about the book?
Well, I think with this new 15th anniversary edition, we were able to put in a new introduction that kind of catches people up on what we've been doing. You know, I'm perpetually like working on a sequel to this in my head, but not actually writing it. So maybe this will spur me on. But this is like a 10-page, you know, sort of what we've been doing now, what we left off the page, you know, it contextualizes a little bit more how we did the travels, which was mostly eating ramen and sleeping in our car. But we didn't really talk much about that because that was kind of not what people wanted to hear in a story at the time. I think people are interested in the author off the page a little bit more now, maybe. There's also in the new book, Carl's photos, we have 32 pages of photos that didn't make it into the first edition, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's nice to show some of those. And I think I think most of the photos are things that are in the book. And then there are some, there were unfortunately, I think some visits that just, you know, got edited out for space or
If we had put everything that we put on the blog into the book, it would have been like 1500. It would have been War and Peace. Yeah. It'd be like a doorstopper. So,
But I think there might be a few photos in the photo section that aren't written about in the book.
Yeah. That's true.
Of show some of the other, and we also got the map in. So we have a map that shows like all the routes and all the stops. And so you can see all the different places we went, even if not everyone is written about in the book.
Yeah. And we changed the subtitle.
Yes, we did. Yeah. We changed the subtitle. The new subtitle is 40,000 Miles in Pursuit of Peace, Pastures, and the Perfect Cheese.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Little alliteration. Extra alliteration.
Yeah, we do love alliteration.
Because wasn't the first one In Pursuit of the Perfect Cheese?
Yeah.
It was the quest for the perfect cheese, and it never felt exactly accurate.
Yeah.
It felt like what we were looking for really was what we found, which was a sense of peace and a sense of grounding.
Yeah. For us, the perfect cheese was more of a sort of
the cheese in your heart.
Yeah, it was like a theoretical cheese. It was like, you know, just, you know, the perfect way of living life. And it was sort of meant in a more representative way than a literal way. And we didn't want people to feel misled that they were going to open the book and discover what
at the end, perfect, like,
this is the perfect cheese.
Yeah.
So. You know what? This makes perfect sense to me though, because when that book was first published, to me, it was still all about the cheese. My goat journey was all about the cheese. Like, I frequently start my personal goat stories by saying it was love at first bite when I had my first goat cheese in college.
Yeah.
It was expensive. I couldn't afford it. And so when we moved to the country, I was like, I got to have a couple goats so I can have goat cheese.
Yeah.
And that was really it. And so that's where I started. I started with the quest for the perfect cheese, just like you guys did.
Yeah.
But you found so much more.
Yeah. And I think anyone who sticks with goats, that's exactly the journey, is you start out looking for one very specific thing, whether it's a relationship with your animal or cheese or filling a market niche or something. But then if you really connect with the animals, you end up with so much more. It's like such a deeper sort of settled sense of self.
Yeah, I know. I was very surprised by how much I fell in love with goats as a species. Like, I just really wasn't expecting that when I got them, but they're so personable.
Yeah.
And they're all individuals, you know, they're just like dogs and cats in terms of like having their own individual personality and everything. And so, you know, people ask, do they all have names? And the answer is kind of, to me, like, duh, like they're all such individuals. And, you know, you talk about them like you would talk about a pet dog or a pet cat. Yeah. I just kind of feel like they're the ultimate pet with benefits.
Yeah. Well, and there's something so lovely about starting your day and ending your day with goats. I mean, when we're milking, because we milk twice a day and we hand milk still. We're milking 5 goats now, but we do it all by hand. And there's just something so, like, I sound like I've found the cheese in my heart, but it's just so meditative and quiet and connected to be out in the barn with them.
Well, and we spend, I mean, a big part of our agritourism business is teaching other people how to milk goats, whether they're, you know, coming here for that experience or they're staying. We have a guest house that we rent on Airbnb. And so people come and stay in the guest house and we offer everyone a goat milking lesson. So just this morning, our guests were up here and we were milking goats with them. And it's so fun to see, like, what a mind-blowing experience it is for other people to, like, milk a goat for the first time, or really, I mean, milk any animal, and kind of see, like, make that connection for themselves of, like, oh, this is where milk comes from. There's like this physical process with an animal, that this relationship that you have to sort of go through to get this food product that we love to drink or make into cheese or do whatever. And it's, for some people, it's really mind-blowing, and it's really fun for us to be part of that and to be the kind of the catalyst for people making that connection for the first time. And some of those people go on.
I know, there's nothing more gratifying than, like, when people who you have helped to start with goats go on to have businesses. I can think of
there's at least 3 people in the area now who have gone on to have goat related businesses who, I mean, didn't entirely get their start with us, but
we claim them.
But
just as you can claim us.
I know. I feel like back when I first met you guys, I was so clueless. Like, I still just think of, like, how little I knew back then and everything, but I felt like I totally knew what I was doing, you know? We all did.
You seem to know what you were doing from our standpoint.
But I think, like, with everything, with parenting, with farming, with writing, I always feel like every day I get a little better and a little worse at it. And, you know, it's always a journey, right?
Yeah. That is a perfect summary of, life with goats and of your book and just life in general. So I think that sounds like a really great place to end today's episode. Is there anything else you want to add?
Oh, just thank you for being part of our goat journey and our goat story. We're so grateful to have met you. You're a wonderful person. Thank you.
Oh, I love you guys. I love what you've done with Ten Apple Farm. It's so
great. Thanks. So, yeah. And if anyone's ever in Maine, come visit, come for a goat hike.
Send your grandkid.
Yes, I'll bring my grandson out. I know. And I know what you mean. I do kind of feel like, you know, I got you started. So I had a little something to do with you guys.
Absolutely. A big something.
A big something. Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having us. It was great to reconnect.
And that's it for today's show. If you haven't already done so, be sure to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. To see show notes, you can always visit fortheloveofgoats.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lovegoatspodcast. See you again next time. Bye for now.